Brian Bushlack is back with Business Briefing.
And continuing our conversation with Patrick Stone, he's the chairman and CEO of Williston Financial Group and WFG National Title. You know, interest rates usually are top of mind, especially in the real estate market. Not so much anymore, and I ask Pat why.
I think what's happening, Brian, is that the lack of inflation and the continued lack of inflation has caused people to lower their expectations for interest rate increases in the future. And that is a logical thing to happen. Now, you do see that a lot of economists are predicting up to three rate increases next year. Actually, Goldman Sachs is now predicting four rate increases next year. I tend to think it'll be two or three rate increases next year. Underlying all this is a very robust conversation at the Fed about how to reposition themselves so they have the capability of reacting to another recession in a progressive manner. In other words, they can help offset the recession with some sort of stimulus type activity. At low rates, they lose a lot of that ability. So they're trying to figure out how to accommodate that, because if inflation doesn't increase, their ability to increase rates will be somewhat limited. I do think they'll raise rates at least two times, probably three times next year. I don't know about four times. That seems a little aggressive to me. There's some very, very good studies that have gone on about the what has caused the slow or the lower amount of inflation. And basically, if you look at cyclical items versus non-cyclical items, the cyclical items have increased and the non-cyclical items haven't. For example, if you look at overall global inflation, if you look at things like apparel, consumer goods, discretionary items like that, they are showing fairly significant price increases. If you look at non-cyclical items like healthcare, communication, some underlying fundamental structural things, they're not showing virtually no price increases. So what we have that we're all looking at is a very low a rate of inflation in core items. Consequently, the Fed is somewhat challenged by this. Personally, interest rates of mortgage, if you're talking about mortgage rates, I would be surprised if we don't see mortgage rates top 4.5 next year and 5% in 2019 and maybe even get up to 6% by 2021. I think they are going to go up, but I don't think they're going to go up very quickly.
Pat Stone joining us. He is the founder and chairman of WFG National Title, Williston Financial Group. Wrapping up 17, it's been a good year. By most counts. Talk about 2018. You touch on that with interest rates. How does this year play out next year, 2018?
Well, we're really benefiting, Brian, from global expansion. If you look at the information that the OECD, Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, compiles, they actually follow 40 developed economies. And for the first time since 2007, all 40 economies are expanding simultaneously. Now, that's the world, and how does that impact us? That impacts us very directly because our corporations are global, and our stock exchange actually reflects as much of the global activity as it does U.S. activity. So unless we goof it up, unless we make some sort of policy decision that disrupts the global economic flow, in other words, some too many arbitrary tariffs, or disbanding NAFTA, or doing something that causes a hiccup on the global economy, 2018 should be fine. I don't see a lot of upside inflation. I don't see a lot of rate increases. I see a growing global economy. We should benefit if we don't mess it up. And that should probably even go into 2019. Now, we'll see you see a lot of people right now talking about a flattening yield curve and how that's a precursor to a recession. Historically, that is if in fact the yield curve inverts. In other words, if you get to the point where you have the 10-year with a higher rate than the 30-year, then you've got a problem. Or the 2-year with a higher rate than the 10-year, you've got a problem, and you typically have a recession. We have a flattening yield curve. A lot of people think that's just because people are getting more used to lower inflation, long-term inflationary expectations. So I don't know. I am optimistic about 2018 and 2019. I do think that we are getting quite a bit of debt in this country. We don't have the same type of debt we had last time. In other words, if you look at margin debt in New York Stock Exchange, it is at an all-time high. It is significantly higher than it was in 2007, 2008. You look at corporate debt, it's 50% higher than it was then. But it's all in relatively well-structured, securitized debt instruments. So we do have a lot of debt. We do not need another $1.5 trillion worth of government debt. But unless we screw it up, it should be good.
And I would say the same probably goes for the real estate market as well. You touched on this off the top of the show for our listeners who are just joining us. I want to recap that and put more of the focus on a forward look into 2018, specifically for the Seattle Bellevue market and Portland Vancouver.
Demand will exceed supply, and consequently, you will have you'll continue to have price appreciation, although the price appreciation will start slowing because affordability is becoming more of a factor. You will not have enough units for the people that want to buy, and so it's going to be a somewhat stressful market in the sense, again, that you have more demand than supply. But if you're a seller, it still is a good market to sell into, and I think it'll be a healthy market for the foreseeable future. Both Portland and Seattle will benefit from increased employment for the for as far as we can see.
Well, that's obviously good news. Thanks to Patrick Stone for sharing his insight. Now for the commercial market and specifically multifamily, we call on Joseph Chaplick at Joseph Bernard Investment Real Estate for an update on the Rose City.
You know, Brian, Portland's always a strong multifamily market. It's been there for many years. The indicators show that it's slowing down a little, but still one of the strongest markets in the country. More specifically, I can talk a little bit about vacancy rates and kind of where the people are moving into these apartments around greater metro area of Portland.
Yeah, break it down for us. It's interesting because I know that the push has been over the past decade to get people to live downtown, but it sounds like that's beginning to turn around a little bit. People are moving out.
Well, that's interesting. You know, here's what's going on in just vacancy rates. To give you an average for the market, you know, Portland is still sub 5%. It's a 4.3, 4.25% vacancy rate average. But when you really dig into those numbers and you see where the highs and lows are, you'd be surprised. You know, downtown, 5.7, almost 6% vacancy rate in the marketplace. The lowest vacancy rate, outer northeast. You know, we're talking, you know, 180th block, you know, northeast, 180th, you know, 170th, you know, the outer northeast. But when you really look at, you know, the greater metropolitan area and you expand out down I-5 corridor into Salem, 2.6 vacancy rate. And if you go east to Bend, they're not even at 1%. Bend, Oregon is at 0.7% vacancy rate.
My goodness.
Less product, but, you know, people are, in my opinion, moving out of the core of the city on apartments.
That's interesting. So why is that, Joe? I mean, is it purely price that's driving people out of the downtown core?
You know, prices are high for rent. You know, we break it down to the rent per square foot, and the average in downtown is $2.30. Compare that to outer northeast, where I just said had the lowest vacancy in metro area, $1.21 a square foot.
Wow. You know,
compare that to Salem, $1.20. And then again, Bend, Oregon, $1.25 a square foot average. So people are going where it's more affordable for the rent. Now, if you look at, you know, just what that rent per square foot is on a one bedroom, one bath unit, downtown Portland, almost $1,450 for one bedroom, one bath average. Compare that to your outer northeast, $900. That's a one bedroom, one bath. And then, you know, you look at a two bedroom, one bath, almost 15 and a quarter downtown average. You go out to the outer northeast, 1,050. You know, again, that's the average. There's high and low, but that's really where people are moving to. I think you have a higher demand in that outer area of the city. It used to ripple from the center out, and, you know, the center was where everybody wanted to be, close in, east or west side of town. But what's happening is the prices are driving so high that people are moving, you know, a little further east to get lower rents. But again, you compare this to any other city in the West Coast, and Portland is fairly affordable compared to all the other markets.
And after the break, we'll continue our conversation with Joseph Chaplick and look at markets outside of the metro areas. That's up next as Business Briefing continues.